Welcome to the Monday Review, a new edition of the Star Blades podcast, where we cast an eye back over the events of the weekend. On today's show, a win, finally a win. Tommy Doyle's growing influence, Ollie McBurney's turnaround, and who's number one? Paul Heckenbottom's goalkeeper question ahead of Bristol City tomorrow night. This is the Star Blades podcast Monday Review. There we go, lads. I've been away, but it must have been nice for you to come our way on Saturday afternoon reporting on a win after what seemed like an age, really, particularly given the length of time it took them to lose a match in the first place.
Yeah, can I just ask when you exactly came back, though, Chris? Because this could be significant, couldn't it?
I was actually back Friday night. What I will say was I was completely switched off because I was watching my daughter play on while United were playing on Saturday afternoon. So, maybe it is me.
No, it was, I'm sure Danny will say exactly the same thing as me. It was great to see. It was long awaited. I think they needed the win. And on paper, it looked a fairly routine game, but I think the circumstances surround it with Carlos Corberan obviously taking charge of West Brom earlier in the week made it tougher than ordinarily might have been the case. It was clearly difficult for Sheffield United, or on the face of it, it was difficult for them to predict which way Corberan was going to go, although Paul Heckenbottom gave us some quite interesting stuff on that situation afterwards, which we've obviously covered in the Star today about how Sheffield United trawled through opposition social media accounts to pick up little tips and little snippets of information that they then put to good effect. But I thought Sheffield United were well worth the win. And for me, the most pleasing thing wasn't the fact it was the victory, because they were always going to get one of those at some point, at some stage. They are too good a side, even with the injuries they've got, for this run to have continued. But what I really liked was the manner in which they got the win. They came out of the blocks really fast. They seized control of the game early on. They took their chances. Illiman and Dye and Ollie McBurney, who I know we're going to speak about later, both writing their names on the score sheet. That partnership looks back to its best, as it were. And that was the Sheffield United of old. That was the Sheffield United again that we were watching at the beginning of the season. A team that really dominates and suffocates the opposition, that's brutal, that's ruthless, and is really efficient. So that's what I really liked about the match at the Hawthorns. Clearly the win was great. Clearly the victory was well needed. But it was the manner that they got that in. And I thought that said a lot about the personality and the character of that group of players behind the scenes. It wasn't one of those wins that they really had to grind out and maybe got a lucky break with a goal going in off somebody's backside a minute from the end. It was a win they deserved. It was a win they clearly prepared for. They stuck to their game plan, and that was what I really liked.
Danny, the early goal, or goals really, essentially, they're both fairly early, clearly helped, because I think we've seen during the course of this month, whatever, since the return of after the international break, that nervousness had crept in as that kind of, you know, as those performances got steadily, I wouldn't say steadily worse, but they were poor during the majority of this month, and that nervousness kind of edged in the longer games went on. So the early goals were really important, weren't they?
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, you know, we're so earlier this month against Blackpool that even early goals are not always the, you know, a guarantee that you're going to win the game, are you? I think it was, as Shieldy touched on, that sort of defensive solidarity that we've seen, you know, not a lot of during this run. I think it's fair to say that was the most impressive thing for me, the way that they sort of, you know, as we said, going into a game not winning in six, you know, you would have taken that sort of scrappy 1-0 win goal off, you know, Ollie McBurney's backside or whatever. But like, you know, as we touched on before, it was the fact that they were almost that sort of relentless machine kind of pressing on that we saw before the international break. You know, we kind of saw signs of that coming back in as well. You know, we'd have all taken a last-minute scrappy winner, but to kind of do it in the manner they did was really impressive. And as we said before, you know, the two goals, you know, we saw that against Blackpool going to an up at home, and, you know, it all kind of went wrong from there. But it was a sort of relentless, you know, to keep pushing, to keep trying to get that third goal. I thought that the change was really interesting when 2-0 up, pull, took off a, you know, a striker and brought another one on, you know, rather than trying to shut up shop and trying to kind of sit on what we have and hold what we have. You know, he brought Rian on. I know that didn't last as long as we all hoped it would for obvious reasons, but he, you know, that kind of positive intent was there. You know, I think there must have been a temptation for him to sort of put, you know, another midfielder on or try and shore it up. But, you know, to put Rian on to partner Ollie up front and put Illiman and Jai just behind the two was a sort of attacking option at 2-0 up. I think that sort of showed the intent there to get that third. I know it didn't happen, obviously, for obvious reasons, but I think there was obviously that intent there to go and get a third, to get a fourth and kind of shut the game out that way. Whether that was, you know, because they've tried the other way and it's not quite worked, I don't know. But, you know, there was always that attacking intent there, which I think bodes well for the future. You know, he's not kind of lost that edge, lost that bottle to sort of go for the jugular when it's there, which I think is only bode well. And yeah, as James touched on, the manner of it was really impressive as well as the goals. You know, a clean sheet will be a big bonus for United. You know, we talk about that. That's sort of the bedrock, isn't it, of a promotion winning team. You go away, you keep a clean sheet. You're perhaps not, you know, United have played far better than that this season, I think that's fair to say. And still score two really good goals. And, you know, I wrote about this after the game as well. I think there's signs that sort of look, as it were, is sort of changing. There's been moments before in this six-game run where the opposition had one chance, they've scored. You know, United have had a defensive error, it's cost them. You know, it's fair to say that West Brom did, as poor as they were at times, they did get in behind a few times. You know, Matt Phillips got in once, Colin Grant got in another time, and just poor finishing. You know, I think back to 3-4 games ago, they probably scored both those goals. United maybe lose 2-0. So perhaps it's a little bit of a sign that things are maybe changing for United for the better. Touch wood, hopefully I might jinx that going forward. But, you know, it's hard to talk about too much good luck when another injury kind of mars the victory and Rian Brewster comes off looking like he was almost in tears. So, you know, you can't quite have everything your way when you're a Sheffield United manager, player, fan, whatever. You know, there always has to be something to bite you in the backside. But, yeah, back to winning ways. Anyone would have taken that before the game, but I think the manner of it was impressive as well as just the points as well.
I think just really quickly, credit as well, actually. I can be quite critical at times, as you know. I know a lot of people probably don't like that. But I think credit as well to Paul Heckingbottom and his coaching staff actually through this run, because Sheffield United, the word I would have used to describe their performance at the Hawthorns was calculating as well. They did look really, really calculating. And I don't think a team that is in a state of blind panic is able to do that. It's probably infuriated us at times, but Paul Heckingbottom was actually, in his dealings with the media and therefore speaking to the supporters, he's remained very level-headed throughout this run. I think at times Sheffield United haven't played as well as he's tried to make out and he's tried to pretend. But what he's done is sort of maintained that equilibrium. There's been no state of panic coming in. He's always maintained, as I've said, sometimes probably not entirely truthfully, that Sheffield United's performances hadn't really dipped that much, statistically speaking, in terms of the factors and the, you know, the things they were doing during games, the amount of chances they were creating, the amount of miles they were running, showing my age there, so it should be kilometres. But what I think what that's done is that's enabled that group of players to stay calm. They will have been disappointed, but I don't think, because Paul and his staff have been so level-headed and have been so sort of clinical throughout this whole difficult period United have been going through, no state of panic has come into the camp. I think they've remained pretty focused and concentrated. And although it has taken a little bit of a knock, clearly it will do, but more confident than might otherwise have been the case.
Okay, we'll move on into the specifics, personnel-wise specifically. We've seen, interestingly actually, a lot of his best work has come during a time when United haven't actually been playing particularly well. But one of the shining lights in amongst that, or one of the, you know, diamond in the rough or diamond in the mud probably, has been Tommy Doyle, who has actually progressed throughout this season. He just seems to be getting better and better. And now that that Sander Berg has been out injured, he's had to step up and try and play in that role. And to be honest, he's just stepped in superbly, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that's, well, I'm glad you mentioned it, because I think that's been another factor why Sheffield United probably haven't panicked too much during that six-match winless run that they were on. Tommy, you're right, he's a wonderfully technically gifted footballer, but I think he's shown as well that he's a very intelligent footballer in recent weeks as well. The pass that he produced that set in motion the chain of events that led to Sheffield United's first goal against West Bromwich Albion was superb. It was a joy to behold. And that is so, so crucial that we see more of that from Tommy. Because as you flagged up, Chris, and as I'm sure Danny will do, Sander Berger being out is a huge blow for Sheffield United. He was a real creative tour de force in their midfield. Now, Tommy and Sander are very, very different players. But Sheffield United cannot afford to become too reliant on Oliver Norwood, as well as I think he's done this season, because we saw during their last season in the Premier League the dangers of that, how teams would just sit on Ollie, would absolutely suffocate him, and then all of the creativity in that midfield, or most of it, has gone. Tommy can create goals, though, in a different way, such as that pass that we've just spoken about. So the dynamics of the team have changed slightly with Tommy in it, but the creativity, or the volume of creativity that Sheffield United have got, hopefully hasn't, if that makes any sense. I think the only big shame for me is because he's got that little bit of sort of a rattiness about him as well in midfield, which I think players need to go the distance. The only shame for me, of course, is that Tommy's not Sheffield United's player. He's ultimately Man City's player, and the better he does, the more likely it is that he's going to be going back to the Etihad at the end of the season. But certainly in the last couple of weeks, you can see why they rate him highly.
I just like the fact, sorry if I can jump in there, Chris, on Tommy. I just like the fact, as well as he's obviously a good player, and he's obviously, as Shields has touched on there, an intelligent player, because, you know, Paul trusts him to kind of play in a few different ways. But it's just the fact he has something about him that I like. You know, you see him kind of getting stuck in, and, you know, he seems to have that little bit of, not nasty, but he has a little bit of edge to him, if you know what I mean, which sometimes you don't often see.
There's a lot of Sheffield United in him, I think, actually. I'm not sure where I'm getting that from. He has a bit of, maybe it is that doggedness that he has about him that makes me think that way. But I think he just fits into the club and the team really, really well.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, because he seems to, from what we can see as well, we saw it in Portugal, we see it behind the scenes at the training ground, he's really bought into this place as well. You know, sometimes, no disrespect to any of the low needs, but you don't always see that, do you? You know, when a player comes from a massive club like Manchester City, you know, sometimes, you know, because it is a culture shock, isn't it, coming to Sheffield United? You know, I don't think that's any great secret coming from a club like Man City. But he seems to really bought into things. You see him around the place, you see him with his teammates, and he's really, you know, he's part of it. He's fully sort of immersed in his surroundings. You know, he's not a Man City player. I said that the other week. He is a Man City player, but while he's here, he's a Sheffield United player. You know, he's not looking, you know, too far ahead of what's going to happen at City. While he's here, he's focusing on United. I think that's really refreshing to see. And you can see that with his play as well, you know, the way he sort of gets stuck in and the way that he, you know, rampages around and sort of tries to make something happen. He seems to have got a lot about it. I think a lot of that goes, you know, people talk about James McAtee, you know, why is he not having the same impact? And I think just having that experience, you know, professional football, you know, the Football League, or not, Tommy had a spell in Germany on loan. I think the difference in them, I think there's a year between them in sort of age, but in football terms, the difference between them is huge. I think it's just that fact that he's been out there in and amongst it in professional football, has seen what it's like to actually, you know, it's like cliche, isn't it? But actually play for 3 points on a Saturday rather than sitting in City's academy and having 98% of the possession or whatever. You know, he's sort of seeing the other side of it. And I think that's really brought him on. We spoke to Paul about this in the summer. United still see a lot of improvement in him as well. You know, by far not the finished product. They want him to score more goals. He wanted to get involved more offensively. But from what we've seen so far, you know, I think he's been really impressive. Been really impressive in that midfield. And I think without him, you know, they look a very different sort of proposition, United. So been really impressed so far, and also looking forward to see what he can do more you know, between now and the end of the season.
Two really important points, actually, I think, to make as well. One, in terms of that comparison between Tommy Doyle and James McAtee. Tommy Doyle had a setback when he first went out on loan. Things didn't work well for him at Hamburg. That's why he didn't stay in Germany. And he's admitted that as much of that to, you know, to us. So sometimes Sheffield United are getting the best of Tommy Doyle now. They're gaining the benefits of those two loan periods. But Hamburg didn't. But Tommy Doyle has clearly taken something away from him, something positive from that loan spell. And that's probably, that may be what James McAtee has to do. I don't know. We haven't got a crystal ball.
I've already made this point to somebody else. I think somebody else will get the benefit of James McAtee's experience this season, because he knows this is what men's football is all about now. This is what you're going to have to do. And by next season, wherever that may be, he will have really, even if it doesn't look like we and Sheffield United have seen the benefit of it from him personally, which is obviously what Manchester City are more worried about. Wherever he goes to next, and that may even be Manchester City next season, this season here will have done him the world of good. And you know, that's just sometimes you're down the pecking order and you're down the food chain, and that's just sometimes you have to be the provider in that sense.
And yeah, absolutely. And the other thing as well about Tommy, as Danny said, he's bought into Sheffield United. He says he's a Sheffield United player, mentally at least, at the moment. But that actually tells you a lot about Tommy Doyle, actually. And that tells me why he's destined to go on and have a good career in the game, wherever that is. Because, as Danny said, some loanees don't always do that. But they're the ones whose careers will probably drift and they probably won't achieve what they should do later on in their careers. Tommy Doyle has clearly grasped that in order to get into Man City's team, I have got to be the best player at Sheffield United. I have got to be the best player at Cardiff City, because quite honestly, if he's not, Pep Guardiola isn't going to consider him. And he's grasped that you just need that absolute focus, that absolute dedication to get to the top of the game. He gets it. He's not coming in content to sort of, you know, rest on his laurels and wander around with a Louis Vuitton wash bag and, you know, £50 pair of sliders on, or probably 100 quid now in terms of football. He knows where he's got to produce, where he's got to perform. He's out there on the football pitch and he's got to do it every single time he steps on it. Now, he won't do, but Tommy gets that. And that is why I think he'll go on and have a really good career in the game. As I think that's just as important as the amount of ability that he's got.
Another player who, in some senses, is very Sheffield United, Ollie McBurnie. It's incredible, actually, the spotlight that's been on him this year, and it continues to be on him. And in some respects, it's a bit unfair that so much attention tends to be drawn to him. But that's kind of the nature of McBurnie, really. But he this season, he's obviously had that turnaround. He scored the goals. There was a little period, like the rest of the team, where he wasn't really quite on it. He was suspended, a few other things going on. But we've seen over the past couple of weeks the character that he's shown, that he probably didn't show so much last year, that has turned things around, and he's gone. I think he went 4 games without scoring. Now he's scored 2 in a row now, and even while carrying an injury. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for him as a person now this season, as much as a player.
Yeah, I mean, I take my hat off to him even before the goals, because to be out there playing 90 minutes with a hernia, I'm injections or not, I'm almost crying just thinking about that, because he must be in absolute agony towards the end of games. And it was interesting as well that, as Paul Heckingbottom actually volunteered the fact that Ollie McBurnie was carrying a hernia a couple of weeks ago, and he said to us, if I hadn't have told you, you wouldn't have known. And that's credit to Ollie, that no, we wouldn't have known. I think for me, we spoke to Paul today actually about Ollie McBurnie, as you would have expected, because he scored at the weekend. And he spoke about the fact that he's made adjustments to his game, that he's made adjustments to his his lifestyle and things that he's doing away from the pitch. I'm sure he has done. I think for me, the most important thing is, though, now they're just playing him as Ollie McBurnie. They're playing him as Ollie McBurnie should be. This is the Ollie McBurnie that we saw at Swansea. Okay, there's a few slight, you know, adjustments to the role that he's playing. There's a few slight adjustments to his game. You would expect that. It evolves at a new football club. But he's not a target man anymore. He never was a target man. So it's no surprise he was never going to score. I've droned on about that for about a year now, so I'll stop doing it now. But as you touched on there, Chris, the other really great thing to say, and this tells me that Ollie McBurnie is back without making it sound too dramatic. He went on that lovely run after he scored his goal at Luton. And then he hit a little bit of a tricky period. And he's come back from that. Because that will have been a test. That was the acid test. Is Ollie McBurnie back as a footballer during that period? Was he going to go on and love another long barren run without a goal? No, he didn't. He's got straight back to it. Great to see. Really like him as a guy as well. He's a good bloke. Great interview. He means well. And I just think we're watching Sheffield United play Ollie McBurnie as he should be.
As James said there, Paul Heggenbottom was speaking to the press today ahead of tomorrow night's match against Bristol City. And he did speak about Ollie McBurnie. And here's what he had to say.
I don't know. What was going to say that I said? He's showing you what he is. You know what I mean? That previously wasn't him. He was letting himself down. And it's not, I think I said after the weekend, it's not the goals that have led to a shift. It's him that's led to the goals. It's a shift in him and his approach to everything. That's led to the goals. He's done it himself. He's made a lot of changes, responded well. And I think he's got the bit between his teeth again, which is great to see.
And from that perspective, his all-round attitude, there seems to have been a switch that's been flicked in a way with him where he hasn't lost who he is, clearly, because he doesn't want to lose that side of his game, but maybe there's an extra focus in there, maybe about what he wants to achieve with himself.
Yeah, and I think that can be dialed in even more and we can get him even better at that. Listen, he's growing up, everyone's career's like that, or both on and off the pitch, in your personal life, in your professional life, everyone, and that's forgotten when you're judging people in the 90 minutes. Getting that balance right is key, and getting people in the right space is key. Listen, he's in a good place. He's doing well. We're really pleased with him. But I still think there's more, and I think that everyone will start to see more.
Danny, we've been saying we want to see more. Do you think there is more? Is still more to come from McBurnie? What do you think needs to be added?
I think pretty much now it's just kind of maintaining this level, isn't it? You know, obviously you can improve on seven goals in 11 games, but I don't think there's much more you can ask from a player. You know, obviously you can score 8, 9, 10 and 11, can't you? But I think it's just kind of maintaining the levels we're seeing so far. I just go back to that finish at West Brom on Saturday. It's just ridiculous. You know, just the calmness, the way he just kind of placed it. We were right behind it from our seat at the Hawthorns. You could just see him he just passes it in the corner, doesn't he? So nonchalantly, so easily. And you think, you know, whenever that Luton game was, during his 43-game streak, whatever it was, without scoring, there's no way he tries that. Or if he tries that, he probably hits the corner flag or Rose Head or whatever. It's just funny how things sort of change around, you know. People talk about, oh, a striker just needs a goal, and you kind of roll your eyes a little bit and think, oh, it's one of the biggest cliches in the game. But the difference from Ollie after he scored that goal at Luton, you know, before that, to Ollie now, is just remarkable. You know, he scores that goal at Hull from outside the box. He's never scored a goal outside the box in his career, as far as I know. You know, and it goes through the keeper's hands, and you just think everything's just going his way. Then, as we touched on before, when that purple patch kind of came to an end a little bit, and he had a bit of a barren spell, like James touched on, you know, that is the test. You know, where do you go from here? Do you go back to the Ollie McBurnie of old, or do you kind of carry on and sort of battle through it and come through it the other side? And it was a little bit of a, not gonna say it's a crossroads or anything, but you know, there was that, it could have gone one way or the other. And luckily for United, it's gone the right way. So just the partnership with him and Illiman as well. You know, he said himself, you know, people were asking him after they first played together, you know, how long have you been playing together? So that was the first time. But they just looked like, because I think they got sort of tailor-made for each other's, you know, strengths and weaknesses. They complement each other so well. I think it maybe just looks like they've been playing together for a lot longer than they really have. And that, you know, Ollie's second goal, which was, I think it was underestimated, the build-up as well. Illiman did so well, you know, to sort of put the ball down and run from the halfway line, which is what he does week in, week out now, seemingly. But the sort of intricate build-up before that, I think, deserves a lot of credit. Tackle from Chris Basham, who's had a lot of stick recently from some supporters. And then the way Ollie just kind of just nonchalantly passed it into the bottom corner was a sign of a man in real form, but also a man who's got a hell of a lot of ability as well, you know, to even try that and then to pull it off. So I think the challenge for him is just to sort of keep these levels. You know, the challenge for United is probably not to overwork him too much and sort of run him into the ground with that hernia problem. And then after, you know, when he's had that sorted out and you imagine whatever percentage he is now, you know, you imagine he'll rise from that after having the hernia sorted out. You know, it could be a frightening proposition really for defenders in the second half of the season, because he must be a nightmare to play against, not only just because he'll be in your ear for the whole 90 minutes and trying to wind you up and just be a horrible person to play against. You know, he can also play as well and bring others into play. You know, he contributes a hell of a lot when he doesn't score. You know, it was a defensive header on Saturday at West Brom, and he must have jumped 12 foot in the air, like, it was remarkable. So that sort of side of his play as well, he also brings that to the team, but obviously he's there to score goals. He was signed to score goals, and he's doing that pretty regularly now as we see. So hopefully that continues for the rest of the season and beyond.
We'll run out of time a little bit, but we will very quickly touch on the goalkeeping quandary. I don't know whether it was brought up today or not in the press conference. But Adam Davies has obviously been in for the past few games because of Wes Fotheringham's suspension picked up in the aftermatch melee against Blackpool a few weeks ago. Is this cut and dry, James? Was there any mention today? Is Wes coming straight back in? Does Adam Davies keep the shirt? What's happening in goal?
Well, yes, it was mentioned today. Paul Heckingbottom confirmed, you'll be falling off your chair, that Wes Fotheringham will be, and I quote, in the squad that travels to Bristol City. So we can say that for absolute certain. Wes Fotheringham is on the coach that has set off for Aston Gate. Joking aside, though, I think it is cut and dried. Wes Fotheringham starts in goal against Bristol City. I think Adam Davies has done well. Listen, he had a mistake against Norwich, but he bounced back from that really, really well. I don't think Adam has done a great deal wrong. I think he's done an awful lot right in his three games. But Wes Fotheringham was in really good form, actually, before he picked up that suspension. So there would have been no conversation around Adam Davies playing these three games had Wes been available. And for me, I think that's important. Adam Davies has certainly strengthened his claim for a starting role at Sheffield United. I don't think he's done himself any harm at all. And Adam Davies will be in a better position at the football club now than he was before those three games. But I would be stunned if Wes Fotheringham didn't start against Bristol City.
Presumably you agree, Danny?
Completely, yeah. It's a decision I'm glad that I'm not taking, because, you know, it's a hell of a lot harder than it would be if, you know, with all respect to Jordan Amissa, if that's a decision, then it's not really a decision, is it? But yeah, I agree completely with Shields. You know, Wes Fotheringham is United's number one. I think, you know, you play your best players, don't you, at this point, as well as Adam's done in the three games. Like I said, Wes started the season as number one. So, you know, for me, he plays when he's available.
There you go. Nailed on then. Wes is back. Just wait until tomorrow night when
Adam Davies.
7 o'clock tomorrow, number one Adam Davies in the team. Nailed on.
No, but credit to Adam that at least there's a conversation to be had, actually.
Yeah. No, that is true. I mean, it would have been very easy. You know, it could have been very easy, that in the sense that Wes could have just walked straight back in. But the fact that Adam has played fairly well, again, you know, that mistake, as you touched on aside, there hasn't been an awful lot to complain about, really. In fact, he has played he has played well and settled in. We'll leave it there, lads. We'll be back on Thursday. Most of us will be back on Thursday for a review of tomorrow night's match against Bristol City and, of course, a look ahead to what is a really big match at the weekend when Burnley head to Bramall Lane. Thanks, Danny and James. We will see you later in the week.